AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack is testifying before the Senate Ag Committee at this moment. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at it right now. And that's after the secretary made some news this morning by adjusting the rules on the Conservation Reserve Program. We'll get the latest on ethanol issues, and we'll head to the brickyard to answer the question, what do winners drink?
Live from the fast track to Invo Knowledgeation via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we take a lap with Tim Haynes and Carrie Estes for the American Dairy Association. Then it's Jeff Cooper from the Renewable Fuels Association. Right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, welcome the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Yeah, quick glance outside. Still a little overcast, but it's not raining, and we're on our way to summer-like temperatures this weekend, buddy.
It sure looks like it, and I can hardly wait. I can't wait. That's it's going to be awesome.
Yes, absolutely. It's going to be fantastic. As I said in the open, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack is testifying before the Senate Ag Committee at this moment. Senator Tuberville is asking questions, and Senator Ernst just wrapped up her session and her questions with the secretary and asked about the 30 by 30 plan. That's one of those fairly, you know, I think if there were more details available to what is really in that 30 by 30 plan, everybody might feel better about the situation. You know, I shouldn't say that because the details might be as bad as some people fear.
Yes.
But we need to get the details of what is really in that 30 by 30 plan. And I think that's the message that Senator Ernst was delivering to USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. So
that 30 by 30 kind of slid under the radar, didn't it? Haven't heard much about it. It's good of Joni to bring it, Senator Joni, to bring it up.
That's right. That is exactly right. So you like that question that I asked at the in the open? What do winners drink? Do you know
what
the answer
to winners
that?
Drink? What do winners drink?
Winners drink milk.
Of course.
Of course they do. Of course.
That's why I always come in last place, I bet.
We got to talk to the milkmen that are going to be at the Indy 500. That's going to be a fun conversation. Those guys have a really fantastic week. All right, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, minutes from the Federal Reserve's most recent meeting showed the central bank's decision makers were willing to be both aggressive but flexible in the face of inflationary and recessionary pressures. Much of what the Federal Open Market Committee said in the minutes was largely as expected. Members favor 50 basis point increases to the Fed's benchmark interest rate in both its June and July meetings. Then they could pull back to quarter point increases in subsequent meetings. Chip, not a lot of surprises here.
Well, did you hear Bubba scream when you read that? That the decision makers are willing to be both aggressive but flexible in the face of both inflationary and recessionary pressures. You know he is screaming and pulling his hair out over the situation that they have created.
Well, I'm just glad he's listening.
Yeah.
According to state news agency Interfax, Russia's defense ministry claimed overnight that it will let foreign ships leave ports on the Black Sea and Sea of Azov. The Kremlin rejected U.S. and European Union claims that Russia had blocked grain exports from Ukraine and accused the West of creating such a situation
made
by imposing sanctions. What?
Made it up. Yeah, just made it up. No, it's not really happening. Just made it up. Unbelievable. The BS that they are trying to sell the rest of the world.
Chinese Premier Li Keqiang gave a dour warning about the world's second largest economy as it struggles with COVID-19 outbreaks and lockdowns. The premier said the situation in some cases is worse than 2020 when the pandemic first emerged. He urged more efforts to reduce a soaring unemployment rate. And Chip, a bipartisan group of senators are calling on President Biden not to lift Section 301 tariffs, which currently target China and their, quote, illegal and unfair trade policies. Rolling back the tariffs on China would, quote, expose many U.S. companies and workers to a sudden flood of imports and signal to China that waiting out the United States is preferable to changing their non-market behavior. Meanwhile, China and Brazil agreed to corn export protocols earlier this week, but Brazilian corn exports to China require an agreement about approved GMO varieties before effectively beginning.
Yeah, okay, on that lifting of the tariffs, at this, while this group of senators are saying, no, don't lift the tariffs, a group of organizations out there led by Farmers for Free Trade is sending a letter to U.S. Trade Rep Catherine Tai encouraging the administration to lift those tariffs. So there's going to be a lot of discussion about this in the week ahead.
Well, Chip, the UK finance minister imposed a windfall tax on oil and gas majors as the government scrambles to alleviate the country's worsening cost of living crisis. The new levy will be charged on the profits of oil and gas companies at a rate of 25% before being phased out when commodity prices return to more normal levels. USDA will allow Conservation Reserve Program participants who are in the final year of their CRP contract to request voluntary termination of their CRP contract following the end of the primary nesting season for fiscal year 2022. Participants approved for this one-time voluntary termination will not have to pay repay rental payments, a flexibility implemented this year to help mitigate the global food supply challenges. And finally,
yeah,
Apple said...
Real quick, that's the news that... that USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack made this morning. There are some issues with it. We'll talk about it at more later in the show.
Yeah, this last one, Apple said it's going to raise its minimum hourly wage to keep workers from leaving. That's all right. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. All right. Thanks so much. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Chip.
All right. So we've been talking a lot about food inflation. Is it changing consumer habits?
Absolutely it is. We've talked several times. Food inflation has accelerated in the last few months, and especially at retail where operators are passing on a higher cost to their customers. So April food inflation, according to a recent survey, food consumed at home was up 10.8%. Now, April food cost inflation at venues outside the home, Chip, were only up 7.2%. Obviously higher, but not as much as the retail. So what we're finding is that through this survey, more than half of customers, 54%, say they're dining out less, Chip, and that's due to food inflation, and about a third of them are using strategies such as choosing less expensive menu items to counter those higher prices. So a separate report found consumer visits to restaurants fell 4% in April, and that's down 11% from 2019, which is prior to the pandemic. Yeah. Now, Chip, the reason this is important is because we are at a time when we're moving, cash-fed cattle prices will begin to move towards a summer low. We've talked about demand remaining pretty strong throughout the pandemic. We'll see how this grocery store retail price inflation and restaurant inflation affects that this summer.
Yeah, no doubt. And what you're talking about, the willingness of consumers to go out and dine in restaurants is a strong leading indicator of just how strong the overall economy is out there. So there is definitely some warning flags on that. Greg, good
Absolutely.
Work, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that's Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Let's go to the Brickyard and talk to the milkman. That's next on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by AltoSid IGR, an easy-to-use feed-through IGR to control hornfly populations. AltoSid IGR delivers consistent results that show.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
The truth is hard to come by these days unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us this morning. Davis! Davis?
Boogity, boogity, boogity.
No, wrong race.
No.
Wrong race.
Different one?
Different, yeah. Different altogether. Different cars, even. Yeah.
Well, let's learn together. Shall
okay,
we?
Well, you know, it is race week in Indianapolis. The Indy 500 is going to be run on Sunday. Qualifyings were crazy. It could be the fastest ever race at Indianapolis Speedway.
Wow.
Scott Dixon is on the pole and qualified with an average speed run just over 234 miles per hour. 234 miles per hour in an open-wheeled race car. It's unbelievable. Crazy. When Dixon finishes the race, he hopes one of the first people that he sees is Indiana dairyman Tim Haines, because if he sees Tim, that will mean that Dixon has won the 2022 Indy 500. Let's bring in the veteran milkman, Tim Haines, right now. Tim, welcome to AgriTalk.
Thank you for having us.
You bet. And I should say welcome back, shouldn't I, Tim? You were the rookie a year ago.
Yes, I was a rookie last year and had the opportunity of giving the milk to the car owner and the head mechanic.
Yeah, very good. But this year, you'll be right there in the winner's circle, right?
That's correct. I'll be giving it to the winning driver this year.
All right. All right. Hey, let's bring in this year's rookie milkman as well. That's Kerry Estes, another dairy producer there in Indiana. Kerry, welcome to AgriTalk.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. Exciting times.
Yeah. I mean, what a fun event. Tim, of course, it's a huge weekend for you, but how has been the week leading up to it?
Well, even the whole month. I mean, we've been doing a lot of interviews. You guys are great, you know, in working with us on putting this word out, and we appreciate that. But, you know, you think you're ready for this, but as every time you do an interview or as you get closer, it gets more exciting. And, you know, and then race day, of course, with the crowd, the whole crowd there this year, it's going to be unbelievable.
Right. So how did this happen, Tim? How did Tim Haines become the guy that will deliver the milk on Sunday?
Well, I was lucky enough here, I guess, 4 years ago to be asked. I was supposed to give it out the year of the pandemic. That didn't happen. So then last year was my first one. But now we have a process where a dairy farmer can fill out a form and ask to be picked to be have this position.
Right. And it's part of being the tradition that is the Indy 500. But, Tim, it's also a heck of an opportunity to put dairy on display in front of a lot of people, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I mean, this is a great opportunity for us to showcase, you know, the 750 dairy farm families in Indiana and show their hard work. You know, they work 24/7, 365 days a year. They wouldn't have it any different, but, you know, the opportunity to show the work that goes into that, producing that most perfect food, it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and Tim, now correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think I remember from the conversation a year ago that you've got a very modern dairy setup, a very robotic-centered dairy, correct?
That's correct. I mean, we're a fifth-generation family, but we built this barn just 5 years ago, you know, getting ready to transition into the next generation and keep them on the farm. But, yeah, robotic milkers. We're back feed pushers, just so much stuff that, you know, sustainability is such a big word out there now with everybody, and this helps us do all that stuff to, you know, make it sustainable, keep the cows comfortable. It's all about cow comfort, and things like that. It's amazing the information you can get back from this thing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And really, your cows are working on free choice just about everything. When they're going to eat, when they're going to milk, when they're going to loaf. It's free choice everything, yep. Isn't it?
It pretty much is. I mean, the robots controlled a little bit. I mean, depending on how much milk they're getting, but they can go in there whenever they want. If it's time to get milk, they get milk. They can go eat whenever they want. They can lay down. It's pretty much up to the cow. And you know, we joke about it. Our cows lay on sand, so it's like laying on the beach. You know, we have automatic curtains that go up and down to help maintain the temperature, all these things, and fans that kick on if it starts getting too warm. So it's all about the cows.
It is designed for cow comfort, Tim, isn't it? It really is. That is amazing. It is amazing. Carrie Estes, the rookie milkman, what's going to be your job on Sunday?
So my job is, first of all, I got to learn from Tim. You know, I got to see that handoff between dairy farmer and driver. But then secondly, I give milk to the winning team owner as well as the chief mechanic. So I've got to, in all the excitement and all the people there at Victory Circle, I've got to find those individuals and make sure I congratulate them and give them absolutely the what's been voted as the coolest trophy in sports.
Yeah. That's absolutely fantastic. Carrie, what's it mean to you to be part of this tradition at the Indy?
Well, it means a lot. It means a lot because I get to represent dairy farmers. I'm a first-generation farmer. I didn't grow up on a dairy farm, and my wife and I made a decision that we wanted to raise our family on a farm. And we got into this. I mean, it really shouldn't have happened, but God kind of opened the doors and allowed it to happen. And it's been a wonderful thing for our family. I always looked up to dairy farmers. I just thought they were the salt of the earth. And for me now to be able to represent them and give our best. I mean, for what goes into producing milk is incredible. The amount of commitment and time. Pursuit of quality and excellence. And so we're giving that driver, in Tim's case, or in my case, the team owner and mechanic, we're giving the best we have the best we have to offer. And I couldn't be more proud to represent them.
Yeah. Carrie, I don't think it's a surprise that you used the term hand off that glass of milk because you're involved in the high school football team, aren't you?
That's right. That's right. I am blessed to be able to coach at New Palestine High School. I'm the freshman football coach and an assistant, I guess, varsity assistant, more of the freshman coach, I guess. But it's really been fun with my players and other coaches who are also very excited about this and being able to. New Pal is not a very big spot on the map. And while we've got a really good football program, we've got an incredible high school coach. It's fun to represent them as well.
Very cool. Very
Tim,
cool.
Tim, I might like to hop in here. I don't want to get too deep in the weeds, but I'm intrigued by your automated system over there. I had read, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, maybe about some experiments being done over in England where they were using RFID chips to sort of keep track of the movements of these cattle, of their nutritional intake and their schedules and all that sort of stuff. Is that the kind of thing that you're talking about or how does this all work?
Yeah, that is part of the system. Mm-hmm. Basically the tag around the cow's neck, when they walk in to get milk, that identifies who they are, but it also does, it helps check rumination. And it also checks mobility. So we know the computer will tell us before we know it's a cow being sick.
Right.
By the way, if she's off eating, if she's not moving like she's supposed to, it also, you know, if they're moving more, you know, that may be a sign that they're coming in heat to be bred. So, yeah, this tags, that's why I said that you get so much information from this, you don't know how to really use it all.
Yeah, yeah. Just because it's robotic doesn't mean that the work is automatic. It takes a lot of analysis of the data that's coming in, doesn't it?
Yes, I mean, we spend about as much time, not quite, but, you know, doing different things, and we got flexibility. I mean, cows are, you know, they want to be things done the same time every day.
Yep.
And, you know, this lets it be done that way, but it gives us some flexibility of when we have to be there.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, Tim, have a great day on Sunday there in the Winter Circle. And Carrie, you know, this is just year one for you of what is a 2-year experience. So soak it all in, guys. Soak it all in. I do have one last question. I do have one last question for the both of you.
Yep.
And I think you know what that question is going to be. So if you can, go ahead and answer it together. What do winners drink?
Winners drink milk.
Absolutely. Milk. Well done, fellas. Have a great time.
Hey,
great
thank
time
you.
This weekend. All right.
We will.
All right. That's the veteran milkman, Tim Haynes, and rookie milkman, Carrie Estes.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Geez, BJ, I looked at the overnight trade and I thought it was going to be another defensive day. It kind of started out that way, and then the soy complex just exploded. What happened?
Yeah, really, soy oil, palm oil caught a bid late in the overnight session or late in its session, that triggered a big, strong response in soy oil. You know, we've also got crude oil trading sharply to the upside this morning, then that spilled over into soybeans, and we pushed above the 10 and 5-day moving averages, triggering buy stops, and you end up with the type of price action that we're seeing here mid-morning.
Yeah, this is reversing a lot of damage that could have been done, but corn and wheat are hesitant to follow along. Why?
Well, wheat has now turned to the upside, so that's quite a reversal from the sharp losses we've seen overnight, and very similar to price action yesterday, where traded sharply lower overnight and early in the daytime session, and then came well off of low. So we'll see if wheat can sustain it or not. Corn's still favoring the downside a little bit, but I think a lot of spreading action going on there between the soy complex and corn at the moment.
Okay, gotcha. Take us over to the livestock trade. Buyers back in the hog market.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, watching that thing, good pork weekly export sales there. And so that's given us some fundamental support. The cash index is continuing to climb here. So that's given traders some confidence to increase those premiums that the summer month contracts have to the cash index. On the cattle side of things, feeders, despite the mild weakness in the corn market, they're trading to the downside, and live cattle are as well.
All right, that's Pro Farmer editor Brad Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Davis Michelson,
yes,
you know how every now and then I make the comment, that just because you don't like an answer doesn't mean the answer is wrong?
I've heard you make that comment several times, yes.
Okay. Well, I think because there are some in the ethanol industry, and I should say the energy industry as a whole, mm-hmm. because they continue to get answers that they don't like, but they don't accept them, even though those answers are right. And they keep bringing up issues time after time after time that have guys like RFA, Renewable Fuels Association, President and CEO Jeff Cooper, running around putting out the same dadgum fires that they put out previously. And Jeff is having to do that again right now, and he joins us. Jeff, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Thanks for having me, Chip.
You're going back to these old burn sites, Jeff, and having to to put fires out again, man. It's got to be just unbelievably frustrating.
It is very frustrating, and it does feel like deja vu all over again with some of these arguments and battles that we're fighting. You know, just when you think you have some of these myths and some of this misinformation yep. about ethanol put to bed, it pops its head up again, and here we are dealing with the indirect land use change argument again.
Right.
Food versus fuel, and some of the same battles we've been fighting for 20 years or more in this industry.
Okay, this latest one, I think, started with EPA's consideration of Tyler Lark from the University of Wisconsin to be a peer review candidate for the upcoming third triennial report to Congress on the RFS. Now, earlier this week, I know that RFA said, listen, no, you've got to reconsider that. That nomination or whatever it is. But give us the full story on what's going on here.
Yeah, Chip. So every 3 years, EPA is required by law to conduct an analysis of the environmental impacts of the renewable fuel standard and to look at what impacts biofuels like ethanol are having on soil and air quality and greenhouse gas emissions and other factors. And so they assemble this peer review committee of 9 people to evaluate EPA's work. And EPA has narrowed down the list of candidates for this peer review to 20 people. And they've made that list public, and they've asked for comment from the public on those candidates. And then they will, you know, use that feedback to choose the final 9 panel members.
Okay.
So they put that list out. We have some very real concerns about some of these candidates. Some of these guys clearly have deep-seated ideological biases against production agriculture, against ethanol, and there's just no way that anybody could consider them to be impartial or objective. I mean, these are the guys that cooked up the indirect land use change myth. They cooked up food versus fuel. They cooked up this idea that ethanol is somehow responsible for hypoxia in the Gulf of Mexico. So these are the people that EPA is inviting or considering to serve on a peer review committee. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, your case against Tyler Lark at the University of Wisconsin was given some beef this week by another research done or review done by the Department of Energy, Purdue University, and the University of Illinois, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we're not the only ones looking at the research that Tyler Lark and others have done and said, this is nonsense. This is garbage. I mean, you have legitimate scientists and researchers from the Department of Energy, University of Illinois, Purdue University, several, you know, consultants that work in this space have critically looked at the work that Lark has done and really torn it apart. They have produced 60 pages, Chip, of rebuttal comments to this latest study from Lark, really shredding the slapdash kind of crummy junk science that Lark and his team put together, suggesting that ethanol is somehow responsible for land use change and clearing rainforest and all this other nonsense, and contributing more greenhouse gas emissions to the atmosphere than petroleum. I mean, you got to be kidding me. And it's great to see these other scientists saying, hold on a minute. This is not, this doesn't pass the sniff test.
Right. Right. Okay. When are we going to get the final list on who's going to be in the peer group?
Well, it's a 15-day comment period. That comment period has closed. So we would expect EPA to announce very soon, you know, likely within the next several weeks, the final nine members of this peer review panel. And so we've been, you know, again, weighing in with the agency. And to use an analogy, Chip, we've been telling them, look, if you were putting a jury together to hear a court case, you wouldn't put people on that jury that were involved in the crime. And that's exactly what EPA would be doing here if it selects some of these candidates like Lark and Tim Surchinger. Remember that name from the past?
Yep.
He's one of the candidates for this thing. So it's crazy, and we're just not going to stand by and let this happen.
Okay, good, good. EPA's got some deadlines on June 3rd to deliver the RVOs for 2022. EPA Administrator Regan has promised that it's going to be one of the most robust sets of RVOs ever. Any reasons to doubt that?
We don't have any reasons to doubt that, Chip. I mean, we are expecting that by this time next week, we will have the final rule for 2022, 2021, and then whatever they're going to do with 2020. And we do expect that that 2022 volume, at least, is going to be the full statutory volume of 15 billion gallons, plus some of that illegally waived volume from 2016 that EPA has owed us for years. We do expect that to be in this final rule. We also expect them at the same time to give a final denial to those 65 pending small refinery exemptions that were still hanging out there.
Okay, EPA, those 65 pending SREs, when there was, 36 announced, denied earlier, EPA provided some flexibility on compliance. In other words, they didn't have to comply.
Yeah.
They've indicated that that there is going to be some flexibility for compliance on these next SREs. What does that mean?
Well, we've been trying to run down some answers on that, Chip, and it sounds to me, and I don't know this for sure, but it sounds to me like what EPA is going to be doing is saying, look, there's these refineries out there that were probably expecting to get an exemption because every time they asked for one under the Trump administration, they got one. And we are denying their request this time. And so they have to show compliance with their standards. They probably have been sitting around on their hands for the last few years, not preparing to comply. So we might give them a little extra time to get their RIN accounts in order and get those compliance reports in. I think that's all this is maybe a slight extension of the deadline to demonstrate compliance. But if it's anything more than that, we're going to have a real problem.
Essentially, the refiners, or those with the blending obligations, have shorted the RIN market.
They have. Yep, they have. And now they're complaining about, gosh, look how high these RIN prices are. Yeah, that's because you waited until until you suspected that, yes, you're going to have to comply with the law that's been on the books for 15 years. And so now you're in a panic and you're out there panic buying RINs. And of course, that's going to have some impact on the price.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I'm seeing that we are also going to get some indication on what might be the format or the framework for the electronic RINs, the e-RINs. What insight can you share with us on that?
Well, so for years, there have been a number of stakeholders suggesting that electricity, renewable electricity, if it comes from biomass, should be part of the renewable fuel standard that is allowed under the law. And so EPA, we do expect, will be proposing sometime soon, maybe middle of this summer, later this summer, a framework for allowing producers of renewable electricity who are making that electricity from biomass to generate RIN credits under the RFS. It gets very tricky when you think about that supply chain and tracking electrons and everything else involved in electric vehicles. But EPA does sound like they've got some ideas on how that could work, and we do expect to hear them propose that later this summer.
Okay. You know, I've made this mistake in the past with you, Jeff. There's a couple of minutes left in the conversation, and the mistake that I make is never asking the question, what's next? What else? What else are you watching?
Well, obviously the RVOs and SRE decision is top of mind. We really hope to have some closure and resolution on that next week. And then we're looking forward to that set rule, the RFS volumes for 2023 and beyond. We're also looking at ways to permanently resolve this E15 barrier in the summertime. You know, we got some respite for this summer, but we still got, you know, there still is a need to get that issue permanently resolved. And we'll be spending a lot of time and focus on that.
This set rule for 2023 and beyond, it is getting it right out of the gate is going to be so important for the entire industry.
It's crucial. It's crucial. It's going to set the tone for the next, you know, several years, maybe next decade or more of the renewable fuel standard. So it is absolutely crucial that EPA gets it right and sets the right tone and provides the right amount of certainty and stability and predictability for the long term of the program.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I would imagine that it is going to create a situation in which some of the proposals in the set for 2023 and beyond is going to, there's going to be some conflicts, there's going to be some disagreements, and there's going to be some ongoing issues going forward that will need to be addressed to get that thing tuned in for the years ahead. Yeah. Jeff, keep it up, buddy. We'll talk to you again real soon, okay?
Hey, thanks for having me, Chip. Have a great one.
Absolutely. Happy Memorial Day. That's Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. Davis and I will be right back to wrap things up.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. So glad to have you along this lovely morning. Hope you're having a great day so far. Chip Flory is with me, your pal Davis Michelson. Happy to be here. Chip, good morning. Let me speak to something that Jeff Cooper from the Renewable Fuels Association talked about. We talked about the fires that keep coming up. And for some reason, I kept thinking, you can't put a grease fire out with water. I don't know what that has to do with anything. But I could just imagine that, you know, and if you've ever tried, you know what happens. The fire just boop, 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 just kind of vacates. Yeah. And, you know, then another one starts over there and another one starts over there.
Right.
The hypoxic zone is one thing that he mentioned. And for our listeners, I'm sure that they already all know what this is. But for those who don't, I decided to just do a little digging, just real quick, and see what I could come up with in the northern Gulf of Mexico hypoxic zone. Basically, the latest measurement that I found, and what it is kind of a dead zone where certain nutrients have made their way down the Mississippi River into the Gulf of Mexico, and it chokes off the oxygen in the water. That's basically the simple way of talking
about
it.
Right?
Yes, the algae, and then they die. They consume the oxygen, and then there's nothing left for the sea life to feed on, or to, you know, they can't breathe, basically.
Yeah.
NOAA supported scientists announced that the 2021 Gulf of Mexico dead zone, approximately 6,300 square miles. The largest was measured in 2017 at 8,700 square miles.
Okay.
The average over the past 5 years as of late 2021, that's the earliest data I could find on such short notice, was about 5,300 square miles.
Okay.
So about 1,000 square miles bigger. But I also found,
I thought, huh, let's do a little digging here. From the May 2022 edition of the Mississippi River Gulf of Mexico Hypoxia Task Force newsletter. That's this month's headline. USDA releases reports showing decades of conservation trends. I'm quoting here, in March 2022, the U.S. Department of Agricultural Natural Resources Conservation Service, that's the NRCS, released a report which demonstrates progress made through voluntary conservation over a decade. The report will inform future conservation strategies, found significant gains for soil health and soil carbon storage. Cool. Quote, the latest CEAP report shows that farmers have done an outstanding job over the years in using innovative conservation strategies that help mitigate climate change, said NRCS Chief Terry Crosby. And just quickly, a little bit more, a few key findings from the report. Farmers increasingly adopted advanced technology. More efficient conservation tillage systems became the dominant form of tillage, improving soil health and reducing fuel use, and structural practices increased, largely in combination with conservation tillage, as farmers increasingly integrated conservation treatments to gain efficiencies.
Good news.
That's a mouthful, but for those who say farmers aren't doing enough, the May 2022 edition of this is EPA's own Mississippi River Gulf of Mexico Hypoxia Task Force newsletter would say farmers are doing a great job. And yet here we are still trying to put out that fire. Still trying to put out that fire, Chip.
Well, yeah, you can't let an issue progress or die. It's got to stay right where it's at. Otherwise, you know, there's you're losing the arguments that you've always had. And just the simple fact that progress is, A, being made, B, being recognized, is so important in the stories that farmers have to tell, and tell loudly, because it is being done on a voluntary effort. And if the voluntary efforts are working and are pointing us in the right direction, it should be allowed, and not just allowed, it should be encouraged to continue down the path that it is on. Shy of regulations. Yeah.
Yes. And all of these things are not only good for this far-flung hypoxic zone on the farm in the dirt, it's good for the soil. And farmers, obviously, are the best ones to determine how to take the best care of their soil. Now, and I was thinking the same thing when we were talking to Tim Haynes, dairy farmer from Indiana, all about cow comfort. He's got this fancy highfalutin automated system and everything with the tags. I think it sounded like they were on collars that the cows wear.
Yeah, collars.
Helps keep data on them, helps make sure they get the right, you know, balance of food and, you know, the whole bit. That's just another example of adopting some new ideas that really stand to benefit the producer.
Well, yeah, and what the other thing that Tim really didn't mention too much or didn't talk about is that kind of a system, it does a couple of things. Number one, it makes sure that the minimum requirements of that cow are being met, but it also limits the waste.
Right.
A cow isn't going to get more than what is needed by that animal. She can stick her head in the stanchion as many times as she wants and expect to get fed.
Right.
But if she's already gotten her ration,
yes,
she's not going to get fed. So it prevents some of that waste in the system as well, and it all comes together and plays nicely together in the overall effort to be, dare I use the word, sustainable in agriculture. Now back to the soil management and nutrient management and so on. I love the fact that it's voluntary, and I love the fact that progress is being recognized.
Yes.
The bad actors, that doesn't mean that the bad actors shouldn't be called out. If they are doing something that is obviously wrong, either they're doing it because they just don't care, or they're doing it because they just don't know better.
Right.
In either case, they should be at least gently, educated on the ways of doing things differently that might be better for their farm and for society in general going forward, for agriculture in general going forward.
Well said.
So still need to do some work out there in some areas. There's no question about that. Hey, thanks for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. Dan Huber from the Huber Report. We got the free-for-all coming your way tomorrow morning right here on AgriTalk.